This podcast is one of the many good ones on the Self Defense Radio Network. I'm Bob Main. Welcome to the Handgun World Podcast, a practical show done by a practical guy. I am not ex-military or ex-law enforcement, just an everyday guy taking self-defense, Second Amendment rights seriously, and then bringing you along on the journey. I'm back, folks. It's great to be back podcasting again, and I do have some guest host material coming up, but I just want to let you know I am back from my podcast vacation. Very good to be here. I really missed it. It was great to have a little bit of a break and time off to kind of decompress and think about what I want to do next with the Handgun World podcast, and I have some pretty cool things to share. Let me get right into it. I mentioned a couple of weeks ago that this is going to turn into a bi-weekly show, really twice a month. It's going to work better for me if I put out shows twice a month. So beginning on February 4th, I'm going to start putting out shows, February 1st. Why did I say February 4th? I don't know. Beginning February 1st, I'm going to start putting out shows on the 1st and 15th of each month. So that's when you're going to get a new episode. It's going to be easy for you to remember. Just remember the 1st and 15th of every month for the Handgun World podcast. The episodes might be a little bit longer than normal. You know, normally I've been keeping it around 45 minutes or so. Well, because I may have extra material that I build up or some interviews and things, it might be a little bit longer, but I think it's going to work out very good for everybody. It's my intent to do more interviews, have more guest hosts this year in 2018, and more subject matter about competition and classes. You're going to hear a lot about my journey because this year I'm going to spend a lot of time shooting the two new M&P pistols that I have. Most of you know I'm a big fan of Glocks. I would not say I'm a Glock fanboy because I have other pistols. I have other brands of pistols that I trust my life to. But I recently acquired an M&P 2.0 9mm and an M&P 2.0 shield. And of course, you guys know for a long time I've had an M&P shield since shortly after they first came out. I'm going to spend a lot of time this year shooting these two guns, getting to know them. I want to really have a good comparison to my Glocks. My M&Ps, my two new M&Ps to my beloved Glocks. And by the end of this year, I am going to really know whether or not I want to switch to the M&P line. I might. I'm going to carry this M&P 2.0 a lot, and I'm going to carry my Shield 2.0 a lot. You know, since it is the winter months and I'm generally wearing more clothing, I'm going to be carrying my M&P 2.0 compact. By the way, I should say it's an M&P 2.0 compact. I don't like the full-size 2.0. That shoots well for me, or I can shoot it well. But in terms of carrying the M&P 2.0 compact, which essentially is the same size as the Glock 19, that carries very well for me. So you'll be hearing a lot about that this year, and I think that's going to be a fun challenge. I'm going to do more product reviews this year. As I use a product, like for example, these M&Ps or a new holster or a light on my gun or different sights and things, I'll be doing more product reviews. I've noticed something interesting, especially when I use social media like Facebook or Twitter. Follow me, by the way. If you haven't liked the Handgun World Podcast Facebook page, please like the Handgun World Podcast Facebook page. I'm also Handgun World on Twitter. You know what I've noticed? Whenever I put out a post about a gun or gear or a holster or ammo or something, I always get a lot of likes and a lot of comments when I put out something about gear or guns. But when I put out a post about training or tactics or our shooters club or anything that has to do with non-gear items, I only get like about one-fifth the amount of likes and comments. Isn't that interesting? People are funny creatures, I tell you. We love to talk about gear when really your gear is the least important part of self-defense. I really think that's the least important. I'm not saying it's not important. I'm just saying it's the least important. So as you know, many talented people sent me material while I was on break to be guest hosts on the Handgun World podcast. And Rob Morse from the Self-Defense Gun Stories podcast, and also he's on the Polite Society podcast, both members of the Self-Defense Radio Network. Rob sent me recently some real good material here that's coming up. I'm going to play for you shortly about thanking people for concealed carrying. And, you know, I never really looked at it that way before. Rob's got some good things to share here, just basically saying thank you to all of us. Now, this was recorded a couple of months ago. You'll be able to tell that when you listen to it. But there's just some very, very good stuff in here. And let's go ahead and hear from Rob Morse right now.
Welcome to Bob Main's Handgun World Podcast. I'm Rob Morse. I'm your substitute host this week. Bob's been podcasting for years, and he's earned a break. I call myself a substitute because, let's face it, I can't replace Bob. Like you, I look forward to hearing from him again when he's back. I met Bob Main when I took one of his courses. I also took a course from Ben Branham at the same time. They were team teaching. I hope you can take a course from them. The reason I'm here, though, is because I have a podcast of my own. More about that later. Right now, I want to say thank you to you, as well as Bob. My news, I carried every day this week, got in a few minutes of dry practice. I hope to go shooting next week with some friends. But right now, I want to talk with you about carrying concealed and about open carrying. I'll leave the tactics to other instructors. Concealed carry offers a tactical advantage, but concealed carry isn't a visible deterrent. And open carry is a wonderful deterrent until the moment it isn't. I'll leave that to better instructors and trainers than I. No, right now I want to talk about the news. The last mass murders were in Las Vegas and in Maryland. By the time Bob plays this show, that may be old news. But if you follow current events of self-defense, then you know that there will be another attack. Let's talk about this next attack that's to come. We don't know where it'll happen. We do know that we'll be blamed after the next mass murder, just as we were blamed after the previous one. I understand why you conceal your firearm. It's a great tactic. I'm asking you to show your pride in being an honest citizen who's chosen to go armed. Gun control advocates blame the people who didn't do it. Instead of blame, I want to thank you for carrying. Today, there were about 2,000 defensive gun uses. You stopped scores of sexual assaults today. You stopped thousands of robberies and home invasions because of honest gun owners like you. You saved lives and prevented injuries, all because you were armed. Did you notice that? You did an honorable thing today because you put on your gun this morning. Because you went out with friends and chose to carry your gun rather than have a drink. For some of us, I want to say thank you, particularly because you are more concerned with being a prepared protector than wearing the slinkiest dress you own. Tonight, you made a choice. There was a time and place for everything, and today, you chose to go armed. Maybe you carried openly and no one noticed. I did. Maybe you carried concealed and no one knew. I know, and let me say thank you. Look, the odds are you're unlikely to be attacked today. That was true yesterday, it'll be true tomorrow. But you went armed anyway. And that changed the world. I saw it. When you look at the numbers, we use a gun for self-defense between 2,000 to 7,000 times every day. That's why criminals in the United States are more afraid of their victims than of the police. Most of the time, we don't have to press the trigger. From where I sit, that's a good thing. I didn't do it. You did. And I thank you. They say there are as many as 600 sexual assaults each day. We know that an attempted sexual assault almost never becomes rape when the intended victim has a gun for self-defense. The women who went armed today help protect their sisters every day and everywhere because the criminal never knows who's carrying. Right now, I feel grateful to you. Thank you. Let's look at the other side. Criminals in England try to stage a robbery when people are at home. The robbers want people inside their homes so they can steal cell phones and wallets from the unarmed occupants. That doesn't happen very much here in the United States. In the United States, criminals are afraid of being shot if they try a hot burglary. That means if they try to rob a home with the occupants awake and inside. That is because of you. You're carrying it home. And that made all of us safer. This time I made you. I saw it. Thank you. The odds are that someone in our families will be a victim of a violent crime or an attempted violent crime sometime in our lifetime. I don't know if it will be you, your spouse, your children, your parents. We don't know when, but I want to thank you today for carrying every day. Look, there's always something in the news. I don't know when the next murderer will attack innocent victims. I know that you will be blamed and I will be blamed, even though we didn't do it. You will be called out as evil because you have a gun, because you have this defensive tool that works at a distance. The TV reporters and opinion writers never mention the lives you save and the attacks you prevent. They ignore the fact that you stop the threat and then treat the injured every day. After the next attack, they won't talk about that. So you might not want to carry because you've been shamed into going disarmed. When you feel that way, please remember this message. Please remember my thank you. You've earned the gratitude of every honest gun owner who tries to carry every day. You change the world. You help make me and my family safer, every day and everywhere. I remember that when I see somebody carrying openly. I remember that when I notice a small bulge in the wrong place under someone's clothes. Thank you. I thought I was going to stop here, but by the time I recorded, they'd had the murders at the First Baptist Church in Sutherland, Texas. By the time you finally hear this on Bob's show, that will be old news. Some of us study these events. Let me tell you what I've collected. I don't feel guilty about owning a gun. This wasn't a failure of private firearms ownership. This was a failure of gun control. Despite our 23,000 firearms regulations, a murderer entered a Texas church and killed 26 people. Dozens more were injured. Gun control failed, until it didn't. The murderer had frequently sent threatening text messages to his mother-in-law. She attended that church. Now, she wasn't inside the church during the attack, but the grandmother-in-law was, and grandma was killed during the attack. The murderer was an atheist, and he frequently criticized religion and people with religious beliefs on his Facebook page. The murderer had a long history of domestic problems and mental illness. While he was in the Air Force, he beat his first wife and child. He received a courts-martial and spent a year in the stockade for that assault. The murderer's rank was reduced, and he received a bad conduct discharge. Had he received a dishonorable discharge, he would have become a prohibited person, and then it would have been illegal for him to own firearms. He should have been prohibited because of his domestic violence conviction. The Air Force didn't enter his criminal convictions into the FBI's National Instant Background System. You and I call it the NICS system. Many gun owners think that real gun control means having a gun ready and being proficient with it. This is where this second kind of gun control saved lives. By now, he's been called a hero, but a neighbor who lived next to the church heard the gunfire. He grabbed his rifle, a gun similar to the gun the murderer used. This neighbor, Stephen Williford, then shot the murderer several times. That return fire was enough to make the murderer break off the attack on the church. The murderer was wounded. He dropped his rifle, ran to his car, and drove away. Barefoot, Wilford pursued him. He and a passerby followed the attacker. They were in touch with police as they trailed the murderer. After the murderer crashed his car, the murderer took his own life. Like I'd predicted, the talking heads reacted in very predictable ways. The murderer used a semi-automatic rifle, so the anti-gun group said we need to ban assault rifles. They also called for more background checks and blamed the NRA. You probably didn't get these facts from the news, so here I'll lay them out for you. The murderer bought his guns legally and passed an FBI background check. The murderer was refused when he tried to get his Texas concealed carry license, because they did a better background check than the feds. Two ordinary citizens, one of them armed, stopped the attack long before the police were able to arrive. Contrary to common belief, you can carry a firearm in a church or other house of worship in Texas, unless you're given verbal or written notification to the contrary. This church did not appear to be posted as a gun-free zone under Texas law. That means the congregation could have been armed for their own defense. They chose not to be. Fortunately, one of their neighbors chose differently and was armed. The murderer was not an NRA member. The armed defender, Stephen Williford, was an NRA member and a firearms instructor. After the attack, the Texas Attorney General said this: there are laws against murder, and this guy violated the laws against murder, so adding some other gun law would not, I don't think, in any way change this guy's behavior. I would rather arm law-abiding citizens and make sure that they can prevent this from happening, as opposed to trying to pass laws that would prevent law-abiding citizens from having guns. Close quote. That makes so much sense. I've recently heard from many honest men and women who provide security for their churches. As you'd expect, they're shocked by this event. As you might not expect, they are also fortified. They're strengthened in their resolve. Church security works hard to protect their fellow parishioners and to remain anonymous. They save lives, and they save lives when gun control fails. I thought I needed to mention that, and after I did, one of my readers summed it all up far better than I could. This is what he said. It's very simple. Evil people will do evil things. Crazy people will do crazy things. Stupid people will do stupid things. Any solution can't involve making it impossible for good people to do good things. When you tell all the people, good, evil, crazy, and stupid, to leave their guns home, only the good people comply. That leaves the crazy, stupid, evil people as the only ones who are armed. That's not a solution. That's crazy, stupid, and evil. Maybe you think I'm not talking to you because you don't carry every day. Very few of us can. Look, I'll take the days you can carry, because you do carry some days. You're being a pessimist and saying that the holster is half empty because you don't carry every day. I'm being a grateful optimist and saying the holster is half full. We can both hear Bob Main over there saying we should both get a better holster and carry every day. Maybe you only carry because your friend wants you to, and you only carry when they're around. I know it isn't always easy. There are times I've turned around because I left my gun at home and forgot it. I know it isn't always convenient, particularly because of gun-free zones. I know that carrying isn't always comfortable, given the weather and how we have to dress. There are uncountable excuses not to carry. Carrying a firearm in public isn't something that everyone else does. Only a minority of us carry concealed, yet somehow you chose to be different and be one of them. Look, I know you can't carry every day. I appreciate it anyway, even if you only carry sometimes. I've said thank you, and I can only repay you in a few small ways. One is with words, and the other is with actions. I can carry today. I hope you feel the same way. I want to thank Bob for letting me sit here at the Handgun World podcast. I know Bob would love to hear from you, particularly when he's taking a break and recharging his spirit. Please write him at bob@handgunworld.com or leave him a voicemail. The number is 210-646-1727. Bob inspires me to carry. You inspire me to carry. Maybe we can inspire each other. I'm Rob Morse. I have my own small podcast. It's called Self-Defense Gun Stories. Remember that evil does not live in the holster, but in the heart of man. Until next time, stay safe.
Good afternoon. This is your captain speaking with just a little flight information. Coming up on the left, we're going to be catching a glimpse of the Grand Canyon. On the right, you can be able to see the Hoover Dam in just a few minutes. We're flying at an altitude of 37,000 feet, and our airspeed is 400 miles an hour. Couple little facts here. I'm packing a Colt King Cobra. That's a 357 caliber firearm with a black rubber grip and a 6-inch barrel. Also, the co-pilot is carrying a Kimber custom defense pistol with all the bells and whistles you'd expect from a custom gun of that kind, with an alloy frame and bevel treatment on the entire gun. And our chief flight attendant, Roger, has a Ruger Bearcat a 22 with a hand-fluted cylinder. All three are capable of piercing body armor at a distance of up to 27 feet, and it can put a hole in human bone and flesh the size of the Grand Canyon, which, by the way, is coming up on the left-hand side of the plane, so just sit back and relax and enjoy the rest of the flight.
Wow, is that powerful? Rob Morse, thank you very much. That was real good stuff. I really thoroughly enjoyed that. That was actually the second time I had ever listened to it, is just now playing it back for you. Rob also has his own blog at Slow Facts, and I will go ahead and post a link in the show notes. Another new format for this show in 2018, I am going to be bringing on some more sponsors. For many years, for almost nine years, I really resisted bringing sponsors on because I didn't want my show to get too commercial. And a couple of years ago, I brought on Concealment Solutions because I so thoroughly believe in their product. And in the last segment, Rob just mentioned getting a good holster. Concealment Solutions is a fantastic place for you to get a good holster if you need one. ConcealmentSolutions.com, you get 10% discount by using the coupon code HandgunWorld. And yes, they are a sponsor because I believe in them. If you want to be a sponsor on the Handgun World podcast, I would like to talk to you. It has to be a product that either I've used, or if you want to send me your product for testing and evaluation and let me use it for a while, then I will approve you as a sponsor on the show. That's the way I roll, folks. I'm not just all about commercialism. It has to be something I believe in, and the only way I'm going to believe in it is if I get to actually use it, test it, put it through its paces, and those types of things. So contact me if you're interested in becoming a sponsor. Not an affiliate, but I'm looking for sponsors that wish to advertise on this program. Now, speaking of affiliates, I did take on a new affiliate program. I am very impressed with Andrew Branca of Law of Self-Defense. I met Andrew at the Rangemaster Tactical Conference in Little Rock. How many of you have ever been to the Rangemaster Tactical Conference? If you haven't, strongly consider going. Actually, I think this year is sold out. I was a procrastinator and I waited a little bit too long and I had to get on a waiting list. Well, I got the wonderful email several weeks ago that I was approved to buy a ticket for the Rangemaster Tactical Conference because I was a procrastinator, had to get on that waiting list. So I will be there. You need to make plans to go to it. Anyway, I met Andrew Branca at the Rangemaster Tactical Conference. He is the author of The Law of Self-Defense, and he goes all around the country doing excellent classes and excellent self-defense law classes. What I really like is he makes them state-specific. Well, Andrew now has a program called The Case of the Week, and every episode I am going to air one of Andrew's Case of the Week episodes, and there's some very good information in here about self-defense law. So here's the first one, The Case of the Week by The Law of Self-Defense. Have a listen.
Greetings, Handgun World Podcast, and thanks for having me on to share The Law of Self-Defense Case of the Week. I'm attorney Andrew Branca. This case of the week comes to us out of the great state of Texas, Stanley v. State, out of the Texas Court of Appeals, in a decision issued January 11th, 2018, the day before this was recorded. Now, this is a capital murder case in which the victim, the father of a 23-month-old son, was a stay-at-home dad while mom worked two jobs to support the family. Sounds great, right? Well, it would be more accurate to say the victim was a stay-at-home drug dealer with a considerable marijuana business. He kept the marijuana in a large backpack for ease of carry when engaged in sales outside of his apartment. Now, of course, an occupational hazard of being a drug dealer is getting robbed and killed. After all, everybody knows you have plenty of drugs and cash on hand. And sure enough, that's what happens to this victim in his apartment with his 23-month-old son sitting on a bed in the next room. The defendant here, Stanley, was brought to the victim's home by a mutual friend for the purported purpose of selling the victim $2,000 worth of marijuana. Shortly after arriving, however, the defendant became paranoid, his word, that the victim and the mutual friend were going to rob him of his marijuana. At one point, the victim touched the defendant's shoulder, and the defendant responded by pulling out a handgun out of the back of his waistband, at which point the gun accidentally fired. The defendant then continued to fire at the victim as the defendant backed out of the apartment, shooting until the victim fell to the floor. At that point, the defendant ran to his car and fled the scene. Now, witnesses would testify the defendant ran while carrying a large backpack full of packets of marijuana, and apparently it was unzipped enough to leave a trail of bags of marijuana behind him as he ran. The defendant would later deny that this was the victim's backpack because he'd be charged in part with robbery for having taken the victim's backpack. But despite the defendant's denials, the victim's backpack wasn't found in the apartment or ever anywhere else. Witnesses humorously would also report that the mutual friend who had introduced the defendant and the victim managed to catch one of the defendant's bullets in his torso, and he was stumbling after the defendant, picking up the dropped marijuana packets. That mutual friend would turn himself into the hospital the next day. The defendant fled the state, left Texas, went to Louisiana, and would turn himself into the New Orleans police a few days after the shooting. And then, of course, he was transported back to Texas. He was charged with capital murder for killing while committing a robbery, the purported theft of the victim's backpack of marijuana. At trial, the defendant claimed he shot in self-defense, and he was permitted to argue self-defense to the jury. The defendant also asked that the jury be instructed not just on the capital murder charge, but also on the lesser included charge of involuntary manslaughter, claiming that he fired the gun, at least initially, accidentally. The manslaughter instruction was denied by the trial judge, and ultimately the jury convicted the defendant not of capital murder, but of murder, and sentenced the defendant to 75 years confinement. The defendant appealed his conviction on numerous grounds, but the one we're focused on here was the denial of the jury instruction on involuntary manslaughter. Now, as background, the difference between murder and involuntary manslaughter is that you commit murder when you intentionally cause another person's death. You commit involuntary manslaughter when you don't intentionally cause someone's death, but you cause someone's death through recklessness or criminally negligent accident. The defendant on appeal is arguing that the jury should have been permitted to consider both charges, and if they'd been given that option, they might have convicted him of manslaughter rather than murder. Manslaughter doesn't sound like a win, but it might be 15 to 20 year sentence with parole possible after a third of that time. Certainly better than the 75 year sentence that he got for a murder conviction. The appellate court took the appeal, looked at this argument about the denied involuntary manslaughter charge, and agreed with the trial court, mostly on the grounds that the defendant gave up the option of involuntary manslaughter instructions when he claimed self-defense. Self-defense and recklessness or accident are inherently inconsistent concepts. Self-defense is a deliberate act. You perceived a threat and you deliberately used force to neutralize that threat, and you intended the reasonably foreseeable outcome of your use of force. When you raise the legal defense of self-defense, you're in effect conceding to the deliberate use of force and intending the outcome of that use of force. In contrast, a killing done recklessly or accidentally is the opposite of a deliberate act, at least in terms of the outcome, in that you explicitly did not intend the death to occur if what you did was involuntary manslaughter. So you have two choices. You either killed deliberately or you killed recklessly, but you can't have done both. So by claiming self-defense here, the defendant put himself in the killed deliberately bucket. But of course, claiming he had the legal justification of self-defense, and he took himself out of the killed recklessly bucket, and therefore he took the option of involuntary manslaughter off the table. The appellate court also rejected every other grounds for the defendant's appeal, affirmed his conviction and his 75-year sentence. That's it for our case of the week. Keep in mind, the Handgun World podcast audience can always get 10% off everything at lawofselfdefense.com simply by pointing your browser to lawofselfdefense.com/handgunworld or by using the discount code handgunworld at checkout. And either way, a small part of your purchase will come right back to the Handgun World podcast. Also, I'm pleased to announce the Law of Self-Defense is now on Patreon, where we have many hours of self-defense law content. And for those of you who become patrons at the $4.99 per month level, we're currently offering a free autographed copy of our best-selling book, The Law of Self-Defense, 3rd edition. We ask only that you cover the shipping and handling. Until next time, I'm attorney Andrew Branca for lawofselfdefense.com.
Okay, next I want to mention that every episode I put out now, from now on pretty much for the foreseeable future, I'm going to do a short segment on survival and prepping. We can't forget to do this, folks. You know, for many years, I also did today's survival show. And for all of you who used to listen to that podcast, thank you very much over the years. It was great. And all those episodes are still up there. If you want some good common sense survival and prepping, just todayssurvival.com. Just go to that website or check your feeds in iTunes, and you can still go back and listen to all of those episodes. It might be worth going back and listening again to some of those older shows. But I'll be talking about some things that I think are coming, and I'm going to put a segment in each episode here on the Handgun World podcast. It's so important. It's so important. So let me start now. Let me put a little segment in here right now about survival and preparedness. I want to talk about finances. Yeah, I know it's a sensitive subject. Finances is a sensitive subject, but it must be talked about, and you have to pay attention to it. You know, how can you live a stress-free life if your financial house is not in order? This is biblical, by the way. Most of you know I'm a strong man of faith. I'm a Christian. I believe in Jesus Christ as my Lord and Savior. No, this podcast is not about religion. And if you don't share my beliefs, that's okay. No matter what religion you are, I think you probably agree that financial strength and financial survivability is very important. Back in about 2006 or early 2007, my wife and I made a decision to take a Dave Ramsey class at the church that we were attending. Wow, what a life changer. And we made the commitment to become debt-free. And we made the commitment to pay off all of our debts except for the home that we were living in. That's one of the baby steps that Dave Ramsey teaches to become financially successful. Well, we did that. I think we did it like in a little over 2 years. We paid off like over $40,000 of debt in a couple of years. I think it was about 2 years and 6 months and slightly over $40,000. We did sell a house and downgrade to a lower cost home, and that helped pay off debt. And then over the years, we kind of reaccumulated a little bit of debt, but paid that off and reaccumulated a little bit more and paid it off. Today, as I speak to you today, no debt except for house payments. Oh, it's such a great way to live, folks. So whatever you have to do, whatever you have to sell, whatever extra income that you have to make, pay off that debt. Control your spending. That's one of the hardest things that there was for me to do. How many of you have, come on, be honest, please. Be honest with yourself. How many of you have been in the same position as me? Hard to control your spending. I've had to really work at developing the philosophy. If I don't really, really need it, then don't buy it. And furthermore, if I can't pay cash for it, don't buy it. My son and I recently took a real nice vacation. We went to the Philippines for a couple weeks, and in another episode coming up shortly, I'll explain to you why we chose the Philippines and who we saw there and what we did there. We were able to pay for the whole thing in cash. We were there 16 days during the Christmas and New Year's season, paid for the whole thing cash. Because I budget my money and I'm smart about spending money. And I've done well for myself. You guys know I've been in sales now 31 years. Selling has been my passion and it's been my income and my livelihood and my source of success. And so I've been blessed. I've been blessed with good skills and good opportunities, and I've cashed in on them, and I've used the skills that I have been given to do fairly well. But what I've done recently is resist the temptation to go out and spend everything I make. My family and I live on less than 80% of my income. I'll say that again, and that's one of the first tenets of financial success. Live on less than 80% of your income. Well, what about the other 20%, Bob? The other 20%, 10%, 10% of that we are supposed to tithe and we are supposed to give to God and to charity. And the other 10% we should be investing. At some point, investing probably 15 to 20% of my income is my goal. I'm not there yet. So saving or investing 10%, tithing and giving to charity 10%, you should be able to live on 80% of your income. And if you can't live on 80% of your income, then you know what, folks? Time to make some changes, whatever you have to do. Ladies and gentlemen, it's such a liberating feeling. Wow, I can't tell you. It's such a liberating feeling. It's hard to put into words how much easier it is to sleep at night and just how good it feels to know that, you know what, if I have a bad month in sales, if I didn't make much of a commission check this month, I'm going to be okay. Because I have 3 to 6 months worth of expenses saved in my savings account. That's another step. So that's another goal. Set a goal to have 3 to 6 months of your expenses. How much does it cost you to live each month? I'm talking about your basic necessary expenses. I'm not talking about your extra spending money. Your basic necessary expenses. Could you pay those for 3 months, preferably 6 months, if you had no income? Wow. that's a liberating feeling as well, let me tell you. So that's kind of what I wanted to put in as the first survival and prepping segment of this new format of the show, because it's so important. And it, let me tell you, for all these years, since about the end of 2007 or so, it has really been nice. That's a huge, finances is a big stress point that has been removed from my life and my family's life. Lord knows I've had a lot of stress in my life the last 4 years, fighting cancer and then my wife fighting ALS and going to be with the Lord last May in 2017. That was enough. It was nice to not have to have financial stress adding to that. Pay attention to that part of your life, folks. Okay, that's it for the survival and prepping segment for this episode. I also want to let you know I am going to always accept contributors to the Handgun World podcast. This was so successful while I was on break. I've got more for you. The next few episodes are going to contain more listeners that contributed material, so stay tuned. If you have some ideas, questions, a subject matter, things that you want to contribute, hey, there's a couple ways you can do that. You can call into my voicemail, 210-646-1727. There's a good voicemail I'm going to address in the next episode, by the way. 210-646-1727. Or record something, preferably in MP3 format, and send it to me by email. My email address, what I prefer now is handgunworld@gmail.com. Handgunworld@gmail.com. You can use the old one, bob@handgunworld.com, if you want. So send it to me. I'll review it. And as long as it's well thought out and it's clean, remember, I have a family-friendly show, then I will probably use it and use your segment on the show as part of a guest contributor segment. So next, I'd like to talk about how strong is your will. Part of defending yourself is your will to live. How strong is that will? I'm just an everyday guy. I'm not well versed in, well studied in psychology or sociology or anything like that. I'm just an everyday dude, but I pay attention to some of this type of stuff. And I guess I draw from some of my own experience how strong is your will. You know, some of you might remember I came close to death in 2015 when I was going through cancer treatments. I had to inject medicine into myself every day after my treatments were over to kind of help the recovery process. Had to give myself shots. Somebody said to me the other day, how could you do that? How could you give yourself a shot? Let me tell you, when you have the will to live, and that's what you have to do, you have to give yourself a shot every day. Guess what you learn to do? You learn to give yourself a shot every day. Never give up, folks. Never give up. As Winston Churchill said, never give up. How strong is your will? A lot of times, the winner of the fight, whether it's a gunfight or just a fist fight, a knife fight, whatever kind of a fight it is, it's the person that has the strength and the will to live. I'm going to be doing a segment in a special podcast on the Shooters Club about this very subject. For all of you who are members of the Shooters Club, you're going to get pretty soon, it's going to be released very soon, an audio podcast on just about the will to live, developing that strength and testing your own will. So if you're not a member of the Shooters Club, you know, you can get exclusive content that Ben Branham and I put out. This is a way that we ask you to support our show, and it's only $8 a month, $75 a year. We've got excellent videos out there. Right after this podcast airs, Ben and I are going to the range to film some more videos for the Shooters Club. So videos don't take the place of training, but I'll tell you what, you can learn a lot from videos, and it's only $8 per month. You can save a little bit of money and get a one-year membership for $75. You can go there and you can sign up at shootersclubmembers.com, shootersclubmembers.com. Well, that's all, folks. Remember, all music that I use on this show is performed either by Ozark Revival called You Ain't Getting My Guns at www.ozarkrevival.com or music by Kevin MacLeod. With all that said, folks, I'm Bob Main. You've just listened to another practical episode of a practical show done by a practical guy. And that's me. Remember, evil does not exist in the holster. It exists in the hearts of men and women. I got that from Paul Carlson. And good stuff, because that's just the truth. Evil's in the heart, folks. Shoot straight, shoot safe. I'll talk to you next time.